Yeah, the Moxie Show with you on a Monday. It is February 12th. Jake is crabby. I'll just warn you right off the top. Jake is in a really bad mood. Jake, are you in a bad mood?
Hey, I mean, it's your show, right? So I guess I am.
That's a yes. Why are you crabby? Don't be crabby. It's all good. We're going to talk about Chelsea. They won today. 3-0. Eden Hazard. 2 goals. Yes. Life is good. Even got an assist from one Olivier Giroud. Chelsea win 3-0. Yu Darvish is a Cub. That blows. The Cavs are the best team in the East already. Reuben Foster should be out of the NFL. Steve Kime should be too. But they're not. And I tried to get a passport at the post office today. That was a debacle. Jake, who are we listening to?
Yellow Card.
Never a bad thing.
Nope.
God, you're just, this is going to be a terrible
no,
show
it's
for
not.
You.
I
just
answer,
get up
I
and
not
leave.
Answer
I'll
the
do
question.
It by myself. Why are you crabby? Should we just get this out of the way now? Like, why are you crabby?
I'm not crabby. I'm good.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Yu Darvish to the Cubs. Obviously, you know by now that I am a massive in size and spirit Cubs fan. And I don't love this move. It is not a thing where Yu Darvish is a bad pitcher, because he's not. He just, in my opinion, is not an upgrade to Jake Arrieta. And the money that you spent to get him, when you spend 6 years and $126 million guaranteed, and you are potentially paying him $150 million, Jake, did the Cubs do the right thing by getting Yu Darvish?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Cubs are going to be a playoff team for the next 5 years in a row. I mean, you can pretty much book that. So I think the best part of this trade is that you hurt the Dodgers. You took away one of their starters, and inevitably he didn't help them win a World Series because he got pounded by the Astros, but... You know, if you believe what we've seen, which is that the Cubs are going to try and turn Yu Darvish into a 3-pitch pitcher instead of like an 18-20 pitch pitcher, they're going to try and pare down his repertoire a little bit, and they're gonna streamline him a little bit more. I think that will greatly help Yu Darvish. But with that said, he hasn't done it in the postseason yet, so I hope that the Cubs are able to turn him around a little bit and get the value out of him.
Yeah, the Cubs are really quite. Aggressive with this deal. And one of the things that really stands out to me about Yu Darvish is that he does throw 6 pitches. And there's an old saying that when you throw more than 3 pitches, you really don't throw any. And Yu Darvish only throws his fastball, 38% of the time or something stupid like that. I mean, they have got to get his fastball percentage much higher.
Yeah.
Because when you start looking at Yu Darvish's reputation now, you're guaranteeing him $126 million.
Mm-hmm.
The word when he got to Los Angeles was that Yu Darvish was unwilling to throw the fastball more, and that he was difficult, not unwilling to change mechanically. He just was not 100% on board.
Right.
The one thing that they asked him to do that he actually did do was to drive the fastball or the curveball down in the zone. And for those of you who don't know, Yu Darvish throws a fastball, a curveball, a slider, a change, and a cutter. And he'll occasionally throw a sinker. Your problem as a pitcher is that when you throw a curveball and a slider, a lot of times it's a slurve, a slider and a curve combo, because the hand motion on those two are very similar.
Right.
When you throw a slider and a curveball, okay, you're still getting breaking action. When you throw a fastball, a cut fastball, and a split, those are just very, they tend to mute each other. The changeup and the split mute each other. Definitely, there's no doubt about that. I just don't love that. He went to LA, they asked him to throw the fastball more, he didn't want to do that. He got hit hard. They said, hey, we need you to throw the curveball down in the zone. Yu Darvish liked to throw it at the knees.
Yeah.
They wanted him to throw it at the shoe tops. He did that and saw great success with it. Do you believe he goes to Chicago and listens to what they want him to do, which is throw that fastball 50 to 60% of the time, rely on the split and the slider behind that?
Well, I think he does do it. I think one thing that the Cubs have going for him is, if you remember when they got Jake Arrieta, his mechanics weren't exactly grade A, if you will.
Yeah.
And still to this day, he throws against his body, but now it's more streamlined. Now his mechanics allow him to have better location and all those things that you want as a pitcher. So they've kind of done this once before with Jake Arrieta. With Yu Darvish, it's less mechanics and more about mindset, and I think that's more difficult. It's harder, in my opinion, to change a guy's mindset because you can't. It's not tangible. You can't film mindset. You can't see it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can see Jake Arrieta stepping too far to the right when he's going to throw a pitch, let's say. You can't see Yu Darvish thinking to himself, well, it's 1-2. I better throw my split here instead of my curveball, let's say, or something like that.
But the other thing, Jake, is that mentality-wise, he now knows that he was tipping pitches.
Yeah.
And the truth kind of came out over the weekend. John Heyman had a story about the fact that Yu Darvish, for those of you who don't know, also is only a stretch pitcher. He does not wind up. So it became common knowledge across baseball that Yu Darvish would grip the fastball while holding it in the stretch, and he would hold the ball down at his hamstring. The ball was not in his glove. So when he'd take that fastball grip and put it into the glove, there would be no movement, so he's going to throw the fastball. When he would put the ball in the glove and throw another pitch, you would see him changing his grip. So you instantly knew it was a breaking ball. And that's why he was getting hit. Does that go away? You talk about mindset. I think that hurts his mindset. Do you agree or disagree with that? That the tipping pitches thing hurts him?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely plays with you a little bit. You're like, okay, well, how was that? Because he clearly didn't realize he was tipping pitches. I mean, no pitcher wants to tip pitches. Yeah, so, I mean, he didn't realize he was doing it. And now he obviously knows that he was doing it. So my feeling is you will see a change in his hand position when he comes set, because that's really the only way to fix that. Most pitchers, and I was the same way. I was never the guy that had the ball behind my right leg, because I threw with my right hand. So the ball would be behind my right leg in the stretch. I was never that guy. It was always in my glove. I would play around with the ball every single pitch, no matter what. Because that's just an easy way to,
Disguise.
Deceive. It makes tipping pretty much impossible at that point if you change the grip every single time. So for Darvish, I think, he either needs to grip the same pitch every single time when he comes into his glove and then change the grip. He needs to do the same thing every single time. That's what it comes down to. Yes. Whatever that may be, you got to do the same thing every single time. And he needs to pare down his pitch repertoire. He can't throw like six different pitches because you just don't need that. Because you know what that is? That works in Japan. That's where he got that from. You can throw a bunch of different pitches in Japan and be fine.
You don't believe in Japanese pitchers, though.
I don't believe in the health of Japanese pitchers. I believe that their movement and their dominance is short-lived because of how much they throw overseas. Overseas, they're throwing 200 or 300 pitches, every outing. Every time as a starter, to be clear, those guys, like Daisuke Matsuzaka, when he was in Major League Baseball, it was well known that in Japan, he would throw 100 pitches to warm up. Like, he would throw a full outing before the game. Then he would go and do his outing, and then he would throw a little bit afterwards.
Yeah.
So you're talking about 400 or 500 pitches on one day. I mean, that's like 3-4 starts for some guys, So Japanese pitchers have a lot more wear and tear on their arm than American-born pitchers.
And he's coming off a Tommy John surgery.
And then there's Tommy John. And so there is injury risk is there with Yu Darvish. I think that's one of the biggest concerns. But you're right. This whole mindset thing is a big deal for the Cubs, and they're going to need to solve that.
Well, think about it this way as well. This is another Theo Epstein free agent pitcher signing. This is the other thing that scares me. I'm a big believer, and I learned this watching the San Francisco Giants. Brian Sabian and I had long talks about pitching philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that Brian Sabian taught me was you cannot build a consistent championship caliber team signing free agent pitchers.
Yeah.
You have to draft the best pitchers on your team. And if you look at the Giants in this every other year dominance that they had, it was Timmy. It was Kane. It was Bum. It was these guys that they grew up at home. If you look at the Boston Red Sox, John Lester's a Chicago Cub. Look at the Cubs now. Like, who have the Cubs drafted? Albert Almora, Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, Kyle Schwarber, Ian Happ.
Bryant.
I said Chris Bryant. Oh. You traded for Anthony Rizzo. So your young core talent on the field, the position players, you drafted them. Your pitchers are John Lester. It's Jake Arrieta. It's Yu Darvish. It's John Lester. The guy from Texas, the Angels, John Lackey,
Mm-hmm.
Those guys, Jason Hamels, Those Quintana. Guys, Jose Quintana, those are all somebody else's pitcher. And if you look at the teams that really succeed at the top, they draft their own pitchers.
The Royals.
The Royals are a perfect example of that. I look at the dynasties of the Yankees. Mariano Rivera, Andy Pettitte comes to mind. Although Roger Clemens was a guy that they went out and got from Boston, of all places. I look at maybe some one-offs like the Arizona Diamondbacks with Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling. But other than that, the best teams always draft their pitchers because they're so flippin' expensive.
Mm-hmm.
The Cubs are not drafting a pitcher here. They're signing another $126 million liability because inevitably, Yu Darvish is going to miss starts.
Well, and you sign enough free agents and you're going to have the one or the two guys who are going to miss significant time due to injury.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Yu Darvish, more than anybody else on that roster right now, is injury prone. And a lot of guys nowadays, TJ is not as big a deal as it used to be, and a lot of guys come back stronger than they were before.
Sure.
Tommy John.
And his velocity is fine. He's like 94.7 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Velocity
is
fine.
So it's not that his velocity is down, but I think that's the other thing. Paring down your pitch selection is your repertoire. It's less torque on your arm. If you're throwing more fastballs, your arm will be healthier because you're just throwing the ball in a straight line. You're not torquing your arm. You're not doing all that weird stuff. You're just throwing the ball in a straight line for a strike.
But ask yourself this. You were not a fan of Darvish for the Giants because of what happened in the postseason last year.
Mm-hmm.
So I ask you then, is a core of Darvish, Lester, Quintana, Hendricks, is that something you can win with for the next 3 years?
No.
You don't think it is?
I don't think so because I think John Lester needs to prove himself again this year. Last year he had more clunkers last year. Every pitcher is going to have two or three clunkers a season, right?
Yes.
Every starting pitcher is going to have those starts where they just don't have
it. He had a bad year
last year. And so with where his age is at and with how many miles he's got on that arm, it begs the question, okay, well, is he going downhill now or was that just a bad year? So for me, he has a little bit to prove. I'm not saying he sucks. I'm not saying he's not valuable.
No.
But I think he's got to prove that he's still got it. You know, he's still got the ace mentality, John Lester, that we all know and love. Then you look at a guy like Quintana. Quintana's a lower-end rotation guy.
I don't know what Quintana is, honestly.
For me, he's a three or four in this rotation because he's left-handed. For me, it would be Lester, you know, Darvish, Hendricks, Quintana. You know, like, that's low. Because Hendricks has proven that he can do it, but again, he's been hurt.
I think it's Darvish, Lester, Hendricks, Quintana. Those are your first four.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't love that, but I think you don't throw back-to-back lefties, you know, so it's to me, you're fine. They will contend it consistently. They've been in the AL or the NLCS three straight years. There's no reason they wouldn't go back this year, but here's ultimately, Jake, the other question. You're a Strasburg guy.
Mm-hmm.
Are they better than the Nationals?
Well, I would say they are. Every year we talk about,
really?
Well, but look, we've been looking back the past 3 years, right?
Yeah.
So what have the Nationals done the past 3 years? They've gotten to the postseason, and then they've not been able to push through.
Yeah.
And by the way,
to think about it this way, do you realize who the number 2, 3, and 4 WAR pitchers in baseball are? Geo's number 2, Scherzer's number 3, Strasburg's number 4.
Yeah.
So they've got a starting staff that's legit. Now they have that bullpen.
But is it legit in the playoffs, though? Gio's not legit in the playoffs. Gio's a strikeout pitcher, so oftentimes he'll go five innings in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of people that'll say, well, five innings in the playoffs in the pressure cooker is pretty darn good.
Well, before last year, Darvish was a 3.25 ERA guy in the postseason.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Is that legitimate in the I don't know.
I don't know, but not to be a Giants homer, but there was a lot of talk 2 years ago when the Giants and Dodgers were both equally good about who would be better. And I feel like it's hard to find a pitcher now, and I'm referencing Bumgarner, of course, but it's hard to find pitchers now that can give you regular season performances of dominance, you know, 7, 8, 9 innings. In the postseason, it's really hard to find that. And I don't see Darvish being that guy. I see him getting there and being dominant because I think he's going to be receptive to the Cubs. I really do because you flamed out with the Dodgers. You're not a Dodger, and he wanted to be a Dodger. You're not a Dodger because you flamed out in the postseason because you wouldn't listen. So you can't tell me he's not going to listen again. I would be shocked by that because I don't think Theo would have signed him if he knew he wasn't going to listen. It's a bad investment at that point.
You know, and this is why pitchers and catchers report this week, by the way. This is why you got to get to spring and have a good spring because when I look up and down the rotation and I for the Nationals and I see Gio, I see Scherzer, I see Roark, Strasburg, you know, and whoever else they wind up sticking in there, you know, I think it's one of those things where I start to figure out that, again, what wins you championships? You have to be really good up the middle, so you got to have good shortstop, second baseman.
Generally pitching and defense.
Okay, so Trey Turner and Murph are really good up the middle for the Nats.
Excellent.
Right? And depending on who you wind up catching back there, you have a really good pitching staff. You know, so then you ask yourself, okay, well, is Michael Taylor a good center fielder? Yes. Jason Wirth won't be back. Bryce Harper is the best right fielder in baseball. What would make me think, in any way, shape, or form, that the Cubs are better than they are?
Because on paper.
Right. But look at the bullpen. Look at the bullpen. I mean, their bullpen. Dude, the Nationals are deep. The Nationals are good.
I know, and I'm not disagreeing with you, but every year we say that, and they haven't done a damn thing that mattered. What did Bryce Harper do?
Dave Martinez.
You're a huge Bryce Harper guy.
Yeah.
Massive Bryce Harper guy. What did he do against a tired Wade Davis last year? He struck out on a slider, back foot slider. That can't happen.
Yeah, but Bryce Harper's been so good. I mean, I get that.
But those are the moments I'm talking about, though, for the Nationals. You got that far, and you had your best guy up at the plate, the guy that you rely on the most. Hey, Dave Martinez, who do you want at the plate this year? Well, Bryce Harper. I want Bryce Harper at the plate. That's my boy. And he couldn't get it done. I'm not saying he's a loser in the playoffs. But
should they have fired Dusty?
I think that was a quick leash. I don't think so, but they've done it, and they're moving on from it now.
Should the Giants have replaced Bruce Bochy?
No, not yet.
Should the Dodgers have replaced Dave Roberts?
I don't think so, because it wasn't Dave's fault that you was tipping pitches and wasn't listening.
Well, then how the hell do you fire Dusty Baker?
Well, I'm not saying when that happened.
See what I mean?
Right, no, I know. I know.
I don't get it.
I don't get it either, but I think it was a relationship thing. Dusty Baker was not great, was not real tight with the front office there. Those two didn't have a good relationship. So when you get to where they got with the talent that they had, man, against that Cubs team, who clearly, in my opinion, was a little tired from the rollover innings.
Yes.
They were definitely tired. And you lost in that moment the way they lost. I mean, you got punched out to end your season. That's a rough way to end the season. So I'm just saying, on paper, every year they look like the best team, and the expectation is that they're going to win 95 games.
Yeah,
and they inevitably don't live up to those expectations. So I got to think, at one of these seasons, it's going to happen. But you're going to have to go through the Dodgers, and maybe this year you'll have to go through the Giants. I don't know yet. They picked up some talent, but they're not going to be great.
Are the Giants the class of the West?
Not yet.
Their outfielder is really
good. They have a deep outfield, but that doesn't mean the Dodgers are still the class of the West.
Do you like McCutchen?
Yeah, I mean, I like him. I think it'll really help him to have a change of scenery.
Wait. I don't know that the Dodgers are the class of the West. I mean, the Diamondbacks, it's easy to write them off, right? I mean, it's easy to say, well, they're the Diamondbacks.
They're solid. They're not great.
They're solid. They're
going to make mistakes they shouldn't make. That's the problem.
Yeah, Torey Lovello did a pretty decent job. He's going to have to manage that bullpen a little better. But they're gonna be around all year. I think the Giants are a vastly improved team. Vastly improved. I don't know what to make of the Padres. I think the Padres are a scrappy bunch. But talent, in my opinion, at the end of the day, it's such a long season that when you wind up running into the Dodgers 700 times in a year.
I think it's like 18 times.
They grind you out at some point.
You get to August and you're done with it.
So nobody's going to percentage bet that the Nationals are or that the Padres are going to win that division.
I think it's the Giants and the Dodgers, and I would tend to lean towards the Dodgers because the Giants still got to prove that now they're back.
I think it's the Giants division. I really like McCutchen. McCutchen's a great move. McCutchen's a really good move.
It's a giant move. That's a typical giant trade.
And Buster Posey is said to be, you know, completely dedicated to leg strength and, you know, versatility. They went and got a guy named Hector Sanchez, who had been a longtime Giant catcher. They brought him back. He fits into their system. Boach really likes him. Pablo Sandoval clearly was not good enough at third base. Let's go get Evan Longoria. Like, I mean, they good went move. Out and made good moves. Move. Austin Jackson, not spectacular.
Solid player, though.
He can go get it in center field, which you need it.
And he'll give you like a 250 average.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you add that to guys like
Crawford, Panic,
Belt. I think a lot of people underestimate Belt. I'm telling you, Hunter Pence is going to have a freaking amazing year in left field. I think he is going to be a plus defender in left field. And just based on the offseason that he's had and watching his workouts, and if you don't follow Hunter Pence on Instagram, you're a fool because he's fun. Mm. And his workouts are fantastic. And his diet's fantastic. But I just kind of look at all of this stuff. Then I say to myself, well, is Derek Holland really worth a damn thing? No, that's why the Giants signed him to a minor league deal.
Yeah.
Like, I like that. That's the move that the Giants make every year that comes back to help them.
They get the guys that you forget about in their minor league system.
Yeah.
And then Derek Holland comes up, you know, midway through to relieve an injury, and all of a sudden he's...
You know, it's the second week of July. You're just past the 4th of July, and you're just laboring.
And your boys are tired.
And Derek Holland comes up and gives you a spot start. Maybe it's a bullpen game. He gives you a spot start. He'll throw a couple innings out of the bullpen. Like, to me, that's the move that really pays dividends. Now, maybe he's done, and you never see him in the big leagues. What did you really lose here?
Nothing. And the NL West is uniquely, is unique in the idea that they have a lot of games that are 12, 13, 14 inning games, a lot of long games, a lot of, you know, you also have a lot of clunker games where your starter... You know, we saw it with Lincecum when he was flaming out. I mean, there were a lot of games against the Nationals where he went like 2 1/3, and you needed like 5 innings out of your bullpen.
Yeah. It'll be curious to see. I think the West is going to be really good. I don't mean to write off the Padres because, you know, Austin Hedges is a guy you played against. You know Austin pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's going to have a much better year than he had last year. I think the world of Will Myers.
They just need to keep improving. Will Myers is a I'm not going to say he's a mini Bryce Harper, but he's got that caliber of talent. He just needs to keep developing. Yeah.
Freddie Galvez, I think, is decent. What about Chase Headley's going back there? Like, they've gotten better at pretty much every position.
Yeah. They're looking at signing Tim Lincecum.
They're going to have to – I was just going to say they're going to have to find some arms.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. So there's your baseball talk. We are massive baseball fans here on the Monty Show. So there will be no shortage. I do also love the NBA. LeBron James and the Cavs went to Boston and ruined Paul Pierce night and dominated the Boston Celtics. What did you get out of that game?
I think the additions to the Cavs brought a ton of energy, and I think the reason that happened is because the guys they got back from all those trades are young guys who want to play hard. It's Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance. Those two guys play hard every single night. They appreciate the opportunity that they get, and I think that all comes from the idea that they were with a Lakers team that was trying to build together as a unit. So they had that mindset already. We talked about mindset with Yu Darvish. Now let's talk about mindset with these younger Laker players.
Yep.
You know, so they bring that mindset to the Cavs, which the Cavs didn't have before those guys joined their team. And then you look at a guy like Rodney Hood. Rodney Hood was about as open as I have ever seen him in his career for a three-point shooter. I'm not sure what the Celtics were thinking, but the guy was knocking it down. Now, with that said, so I said Friday on the show, Rodney Hood has got to stay consistent. I'm not saying he's got to make 7 threes a night, but
is that who he is, though?
He needs 2, 3, 4 a night. If he can bring that, great. You know, and then you look at George Hill. What more could you ask of George Hill? He's a defensive just
tenacity
stud.
On defense.
The guy just gets after and understands how to understands space and understands where his body is in relation to the ball carrier and the guy he's guarding. He gets that. And I think that's really important. So then you add LeBron to that mix, and all of a sudden you got a nice little group.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. By the way, if you didn't see it, the Cavs beat the Celtics 121-99. LeBron was outstanding. I think the thing that has changed so much just to my eyes, I know it's only one game or whatever it is, but
yeah.
I think the thing that's changed so much to my eyes is that you have a team that is really busting it on defense.
Yeah.
You have a team that is able to compete with any team their defense to the other team's offense.
Yeah.
That's the big difference. And you have a lot of want-to guys. But what you also acquired were a bunch of guys that were coached well.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that there was a lot of LeVar Ball hating on Luke Walton and saying he didn't know what he was doing. And it's very clear to me that Larry Nance and Jordan Clarkson were very well coached.
Yeah.
You look at a guy like a Rodney Hood, was very well coached. Rodney Hood talked about after the game that he's never had this kind of space to operate. He didn't have to head fake or step back to make a three. Those kinds of things turn average players into very good.
But why did he have that space?
Because you have to double other guys.
No, because you have to collapse on LeBron when he's driving, and LeBron understands how to draw attention.
Yeah.
Just the same way that Gordon Hayward understood how to draw attention when he was with the Jazz. And I think Rodney Hood, his numbers suffered because he went from being a spot-up shooter and a guy who handled the ball a little bit to a guy that had the ball in his hands all
Absolutely.
The time and had to try and get his own. So on the Cavs, that role is better for him, and that's why he's going to find success.
And I think the other thing that really helps is LeBron now has other guys. Look at Jordan Clarkson. We talked about this as well, and I know you disagree with me about this, but I think Jordan Clarkson's a 25-a-night guy. He'll give you 25 minutes. He'll give you somewhere between 10 and 15 points on the regular. He's going to shoot the ball well, but he's going to make the right pass.
Yeah.
And he knows, hey, look, this is LeBron's team. Isaiah Thomas took touches from LeBron, and you can't do that in Cleveland. That's LeBron's team. I look at Rodney Hood, and I think Rodney Hood has always had superstar elite shooter upside. We haven't seen that because you've been able to play Rodney Hood tight.
Mm-hmm.
Because who was really, especially
Nobody.
This year, they weren't scared
Donovan
of the
Mitchell.
Other people on that team. Well, now you have to respect Jordan Clarkson. You have to respect J.R. Smith actually having space. J.R. Smith was 3 of 4 from three. That wasn't an accident.
Yeah.
He had time and he had space to look at the ball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are things that scare you. Now, are they better than the Boston Celtics in a 5 or 7-game series?
I think offensively they are better. I think they have more guys that can put it in the hole. But I also think that defensively, in a 5 or 7-game series, it comes down to who wants it more, because you get to like game 3 or game 4, and if that series is real tight, the final couple games in those series come down to who wants it more. And I think at some point you just have to understand that, you know, Kyrie is going to get his, but what else do you do? I mean, Kyrie's going to get his, and other guys on the team are just going to contribute. It's the same setup LeBron has in Cleveland. It's LeBron and everybody else, but everybody else on Cleveland just happens to be better than everybody else on Boston. So
yeah.
If you're Boston, Hayward is said to not be coming back. The general mindset in Boston is, well, Hayward's not coming back. We haven't talked to him.
He's going
to
play this year.
My thing is,
I don't
is,
buy it.
But I don't blame him for having that mindset, because you can't assume a guy is going to come back. You have to play it worst case scenario, which is he's not
Ooh,
coming
I like
back.
That. I like
but
that.
You, in the back of your head, you have to think, okay, well, there's a chance because he's standing.
So you're saying there's a chance.
There's light at the end of the tunnel. But my question is now, because of where the Cavs are at in the win-loss column, they got to make up ground now. They've got to beat teams like OKC. They
sure.
got to keep beating the Celtics. They got to beat the Wizards and the Raptors. You got to beat those teams. Will they be able to do that?
I think I don't know how to say this without sounding like a jerk, but the Raptors just don't look that great to me. And I think the Raptors any other year are third or fourth in the East, but because of the talent evacuation from the East to the West.
Yeah.
I think the Raptors are in a position where, yeah, hey, we're doing well. We're winning. This is kind of neat. But if you go man for man, seriously, if you go man for man up and down those rosters, how do you look at the Cavs and not say, yeah, this is the best team in the East?
How long do you think? And I was actually surprised how well the Cavs played, because before that game, you and I were talking about how, you know, there's going to be a buffer period. There's going to be like 5 to 7 games where they're going to have to get used to playing well together. But I like their mindset going into this game against Boston that, hey, give LeBron the ball and space the floor. If you do that, you'll get quality looks, because basketball players in the NBA understand how to play basketball. They understand spacing. They understand where they should be.
Yes.
So for the first few games, you're probably not going to run complicated offensive sets like you will in the playoffs. Right now, they're just doing drive and kick, and they happen to knock down those shots.
Sure.
And Boston did not. So my question is, as they learn to play together, when both of these teams are healthy and ready to go, I think it's very close.
But think about this. Man for man, would you rather have LeBron? I think Osman gave them some good minutes yesterday. I don't think he's going to start on the regular. Tristan Thompson, George Hill, and J.R. Smith or Morris, Horford, Tatum, who's just, I think, really average right now and below average, Kyrie and Jaylen Brown. Well, starting five, I'm probably taking the Celtics. But I think depth is what always wins. So Theis, Ogilvy, Nader, Monroe, Baines, Rozier are not as good as Zizek and Nance and Green and Clarkson and Calderon and Hood and Korver.
Yeah.
The bench will win a championship for the Cleveland Cavaliers or an Eastern Conference title for the Cavaliers. The bench in Toronto is not great.
It's nobody.
Like, what are you hanging on to? When you talk about the bench in Toronto, there's nothing to hang on to there.
Yeah.
There's, again, their starters, when you look at Toronto on paper, they look great. But if you got to put them in a seven-game series against the Cleveland Cavaliers, I'm taking the Cavs.
Yeah, all day. Well, because if you're the Raptors against the Cavs, your starters are probably going to have to play 36 to 40 minutes.
Yeah,
because
they're not – I got to tell you, they're not great. I just – I know everybody's excited about Toronto, and I get that. I know that.
I think they're the third best team behind the Celtics and the Cavs, and I think there's a discussion about who's the best team in the East after this past weekend's games.
The big difference is Valanciunas.
Yeah,
but the problem is Valanciunas is minimized in a long series because you play a lot more quickly. You're playing much less half court, and the Cavaliers now with Nance and with Thompson and with LeBron.
I think Nance is
going
to start, man. By the time you get to the playoffs, I think Nance will be starting.
I don't know that he's a starter. He's not a 30-minute a night guy. He's because he's not polished enough. He mentally gets tired before he physically gets tired, and he's not a if you ask him to dunk five times a game, see ball dunk ball good, right? Like that's Larry Nance. Hey, Larry, I'm going to need some 9-foot pull-ups. Ooh, I might get you one out of five of those.
What do you make of his rebounding?
Well, he's an elite,
versus athlete. Versus Tristan, because that's a comparison.
He's an elite athlete. He's a volleyball player, so his jump, his get-off is really good.
Yeah.
He's just not a polished player. I like him more defensively than offensively. And you know what I really like about Larry Nance? That Luke Walton taught that kid how to play the pick and roll.
Yeah, he really
like,
did.
Larry Nance can play the pick and roll. And LeBron in high pick and roll especially, when LeBron has an outlet, which is either a three or an alley-oop, he's deadly. Yeah. Because now you can't just lock on to LeBron because you're worried about
nice
getting dunked on.
For LeBron, it's turned into a luxury this season to have somebody who can knock down a three.
Absolutely.
I mean, now he's got guys who can really shoot. I mean, it's kind of scary. I mean, you think J.R. Smith, he can shoot. Rodney Hood can shoot. George Hill can shoot. LeBron can shoot. And Larry Nance can dunk on anybody.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. I feel like Larry Nance will be a starter at some point in his career. It may not be this year, but he needs to trend up to that role.
I think in the future. I don't think right now. He's the first big man off the bench.
Yeah.
That's what he is. He can play small basketball because he's an athlete. Like Tristan Thompson's biggest problem is he's got real heavy legs, so he's not a guy that gets up and down the floor.
Yeah.
Larry Nance has guard athleticism in a center's body. But I truly think he if we're going to put numbers on guys positionally, he's more of a four than he is a five, just because of the leaping ability and the athletic ability. But in the NBA, the four has to shoot the three, and that's not who Larry is.
Yeah.
So I think it's fascinating, but hey. You know I love talking the NBA. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show, MONTY, The Monty Show. Let's talk the National Football League. Reuben Foster is in a hell of a lot of trouble.
Again.
So you know that he got arrested, I think it was like a month ago for weed. Like he had some weed on him, he got arrested. Okay, well this is really no big deal. We'll get over it.
Right.
Now he gets arrested for suspected domestic violence.
Right.
That involved holding a woman against her will and possessing an assault weapon. This is a real problem. Police responded to a disturbance call placed at 9:15 in the morning on Sunday. They arrived to speak to Reuben Foster and the alleged victim. The investigation led to an arrest of Foster. They booked him into the Santa Clara County Jail, which is up in the Bay Area. He posted $75,000 in bail. This is just bad. This is assault weapons. This is domestic violence. And here's my thing. why have they not suspended him immediately? Why have, because today Reuben Foster went to the 49ers facility and met with them, presumably to get slapped in the mouth and asked, what the hell were you thinking?
Yeah.
Or not thinking. But in my opinion, at some point, and I'm trying to be gentle with this, but I put domestic violence in a separate little category. I do not believe you can ever, as a man, put your hands on a woman. You cannot do it. You cannot take their cell phone so they don't call the cops. You cannot hold them at gunpoint. You cannot Greg Hardy them onto a bed full of weapons. You can't throw them out of your apartment naked. You can't knock them out in an elevator, Ray Rice. You know, like, you can't do this stuff. Yet it continues to happen. I want to say, as soon as you're accused, you need to be suspended. The only problem with that is, just because you're accused doesn't make you guilty.
Mm-hmm.
But this is not Reuben Foster's first time to the farm.
Right.
Okay, Reuben Foster has been an issue off the field. This arrest in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, which is where he played at Alabama.
Right.
He was arrested and charged with second-degree marijuana possession. I don't know what you do with this, man, because I'm tired of it. I'm tired of hearing about, you know, this situation in Washington, and I know that this is probably a bit of a stretch for most people, but, you know, this situation with the secretary where, you know, he the president's trusted advisor, one of his closest advisors, has two ex-wives who are now publicly speaking about how they were physically assaulted. Pictures have come out where this guy, you know, gave one of his wives a black eye. Like, why were you not fired the moment that that came out? And here's the other question. Man, you know, like, why are we trying to coddle and protect these guys? Are we not disciplining? Are we not disciplining these guys because Reuben Foster's a really good linebacker? To hell with that. At what point do we say it's not good enough?
Yeah.
That's my question. Like, should there be discipline right now on Reuben Foster?
For him, with his track record, yes. Here's the thing. First time offense, no, you shouldn't be suspended right away. It's your first time. First time you've ever been accused of anything, right? If that goes poorly and you get convicted, if it comes out that it is true that you beat your wife or whoever, whatever woman you decided to beat, if that comes out true, you get past it. Okay, we can kind of set that aside.
But no matter what, if you plead or if you're found guilty, I don't care. If
there's any other result than proof that you are innocent in whatever you are accused of, you're guilty in my mind. It's that simple.
Yeah.
Whether you pleaded, you were guilty, whatever.
Yes.
You're guilty.
Correct.
After that first time, you're accused again. All right, suspended and a monetary fine. And it escalates on a pyramid-style scale. So second time, you know, it's $5 and you miss 5 games, let's say. Third time, it's $10 and you miss 8 games. You know, like that. Something like that. That's what should happen.
I don't disagree with that.
Maybe it's a three-strike thing. Maybe you do, when you get proved guilty, you know, when you get proved guilty, you will be fined.
Yeah. I don't disagree with that. And I think the other thing that I think we all have to consider here is that it's not good enough just to let this stuff go. And I want to talk about Johnny Manziel. And I know that this is a very delicate subject. Johnny Manziel today gave an interview where he talked about being bipolar and that he went to treatment and he was diagnosed and he went, you know, he's been working with a therapist and he says that's the best thing in his life. And I'm all good with that. But Johnny Manziel did a lot of things that I guess could be attributed to bipolar disorder. He admits that he's an alcoholic. I don't feel like this bipolar confession from Johnny Manziel should be a pass back to the NFL. You know what I mean? Like, am I being too insensitive about that? I'm not trying to sound like a jerk, but does a bipolar diagnosis excuse Johnny Manziel getting on an airplane, not studying his playbook, and going to Vegas? I don't think it does.
I don't think it excuses it. I think when we talk about the landscape of his career and we think about his comeback, yeah, that matters. It matters to some people, but for me, it doesn't change the decisions he's made.
And I guess that's more of the issue. I think it doesn't excuse the decisions he's made. I don't know.
Being bipolar doesn't excuse the fact that you went to Vegas instead of doing your homework.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't excuse that fact.
No, it doesn't.
Because being bipolar, in my opinion, I mean, sure, you can make a case, but in my opinion, it doesn't affect you enough to make you say, hey, I'm not going to study today. I'm going to go to Vegas and get lit.
Yeah, I think I'm going to drink a quart of vodka instead of study my playbook. Like, yeah. That to me is inexcusable.
That to me is inexcusable, exactly. I agree with you. But what bipolar disorder does for you is, let's say in-game, right? You're feeling good. You threw an interception. Now you're feeling really low. More low than a normal person would feel, and it affects you tremendously negatively. Like, it just makes the swings more. It exaggerates everything. It doesn't make
I'm not minimizing the impact of mental illness or disease. Yeah. None of that. I'm not.
I think it's a fine line, and I think there's a lot of gray area because, again, and I talked about this before with you, Darvish, mindset is not tangible. You can't reach out and grab mindset off the tree and eat it. You can't do it.
No.
So,
what do you make of the slopestyle mess at the Olympics? Before we rip the post office for this passport process.
Yeah.
What do you make of the slopestyle mess at the Olympics? If you didn't see it, slopestyle, which is snowboarding with flair, it's a snowboarding event that requires significant airtime. Like, as in aerial flying for the competitor.
Yeah.
They do three big jumps. And it was to the point where people were on the verge of being seriously injured. Yet
Because of the wind.
Yes. The ski and snowboard officials did not postpone the event because it was so windy. Yet they delayed the giant slalom.
Yeah.
Because it was too windy. Giant slalom is a ski event where you rarely, if ever, leave the ground. Do you believe there's a bias against snowboarding at the Olympics? Because I do, and there's a lot of people talking about this. This is not my idea. I get it.
I think there's
a bias.
Yeah, this idea is all over the internet. And just from my personal experience, there is a bias. Like, you go to Park City, there's a bias against snowboarders at certain resorts. I'm not going to name those. If you've been there, you know what I'm talking about.
Vail, Colorado.
But, like, Alta in Utah doesn't...
You're not allowed to snowboard.
You can't snowboard there. Like, so there's a bias against snowboarders, and it's... At best, it's an accusation. It's easy to paint that picture, though, with the decision to delay giant slalom and downhill and not delay slopestyle due to conditions. I mean, it's the same
conditions.
Where
you're putting people's lives in jeopardy.
Exactly. And so in slopestyle, the biggest problem is that you're literally jumping, and some of these jumps you're falling off at six stories. That's how big they're going. And so when...
You're traveling 50, 60 feet in the air.
So when you get that high, the wind has a big-time effect, especially as a snowboarder. And so to not delay it is pretty suspect, but at the same time, the reason for not delaying it was that, you know, hey, we already delayed the skiing event. We can't do it. That's what they said. So, you know, I just think at some point, it's the Olympics. You know, I don't want to be the guy that's like, well, deal with it. It's the Olympics. But it's the Olympics. You get one shot every so often. So you got to go and get it while you can. And so I don't know what else to say about it. You know, I feel like because genetically the way women are built, it is more challenging to operate in those kind of conditions.
Yeah.
You know, and so it's not a slight because they're women. It's a fact of life. It is genetic, like, makeup that they are lighter.
Dude,
they should have delayed it.
You're in the deep end of the pool.
Well, I'm just
saying, should have delayed the event.
I get it, but at the same time, they shouldn't have because they didn't have the option to. So my point is, go out and get it.
Some option. You could have made the option if you wanted to. You did for skiing. So, but that's just me. Anyway, before we get out of here today, I am going to Ireland in April, right?
Dublin.
So Dublin, Ireland. Yeah. It turns out my passport's expired by like 3 weeks. So I have to get my passport renewed.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to the post office in Scottsdale today and they were just like, no, we don't do that here. You got to go to the special post office, but you got to call them and make an appointment. Called them like 10 times, never even answered the phone.
And it hangs up after it rings for so long.
Yeah. So then we call the passport office at the government, at the U.S. government here in Phoenix. Oh, yeah, you got to go online. Hey, can I come in tomorrow? I don't know. How long will it take if I do? I don't know. Hey, can you make an appointment for me? No. So why am I calling you? I don't know. all right, I gotta go. Like, sorry to bother you. So I get online, and the guy on the phone was like, yeah, there's no appointments tomorrow. I can't do that. Get online, there's like a ton of appointments open tomorrow. No problem. So booked it online, and then I gotta go now tomorrow morning and just hang out at the passport office.
Great.
That'll be
great.
Fun.
That'll be really great.
It's gotten to the point where I don't like going to the DMV, the post office. I have a P.O. box. I hate going to the P.O. box. Like, it shouldn't be difficult like this. And me, I'm probably just whining and complaining at this point. I'm kind of a big deal, and I think I deserve special treatment. That's a lie. I don't deserve special treatment at all. But I just think us as Americans, we pay so much money in tax, and we have, like, no privilege. When it comes to the government we pay, I feel like there's very little coming back this way now.
Yeah.
You know, like, the post office is difficult.
The
passports are difficult.
It's just a problem on every level. We're probably going to waste 2.5 to 3 hours there tomorrow.
The DMV, difficult.
That was a 4-hour thing.
The IRS, difficult. Like, everything. Like, the clerk's office for anything real estate, difficult. Getting a permit, difficult.
Yeah.
I guess I should stop complaining and whining. But whatever. It is what it is. Find me on Twitter, The Monty Show. MONTY, The Monty Show. Back tomorrow. After Blackhawks and Yotes tonight, we may have no voices. So for one time with his strong final voice, say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.